You are now listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Simon Fraser University in Burnaby, British Columbia. We strive to provide perspectives that are rarely expressed in mainstream media. If you'd like to know more about us, check out our website at cjsf.ca.
New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in Conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org. It is only through a change in human consciousness that the world will be transformed. The personal and the planetary are connected. As we expand our awareness of mind, body, psyche, and spirit, and bring that awareness actively into the world, so also will the world be changed. This is our quest as we explore new dimensions.
For the past decade, I've been part of a chorus that is led by an extraordinary musician and director who leads us in traditional Black spiritual music and other world music. Embedded in this music lives the strength and resilience of the Black ancestors who continue to inspire the larger community. Planting these seeds of hope and compassion is the most important thing we can do in the face of oppression, negativity, terror, and injustice. Today, we'll be exploring singing together as a powerful force for spiritual sustenance and social change with our guest, Benjamin Mertz. Benjamin Mertz is a biracial man who is the Director of Diversity and Inclusion for the Berkeley Executive Coaching Institute. He serves on the Board of Directors of the Interfaith Movement for Human Integrity and is the founder and director of Joyful Noise Gospel Singers. He's a composer, performer, and song leader who specializes in the music of the Black spiritual tradition and is a human rights and racial justice activist. When not performing music, he writes and speaks on issues of racial justice, economic justice, Black history, and works on creating interfaith and interracial alliances. He can often be found leading songs at benefit concerts, vigils, protests, actions, sacred services, and workshops. His albums include Climbing Up the Mountain, and also there's a live recording of the chorus called I Dream. So please join us for the next hour as we explore the music of the Black spiritual tradition and how it ignites hearts and minds with our guest, Benjamin Mertz. I'm speaking with Benjamin at his home by remote connection. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. I'll be your host. Welcome to New Dimensions. Benjamin, welcome.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. What a pleasure.
Oh, it's my pleasure and my honor. I mentioned your activism and social justice work, and I'd love for you to share with us some of the early influences on you. You do this work primarily through the music. And so who were some of the early influences in your musical career?
I mean, as a musician, it begins with my mother. The piano was the center of our home. My mother sang with the Ridgewood Gilbert and Sullivan Opera Company from when I was about 3 years old until I was maybe 15. So for 12 years of my childhood, I went to the opera to see my mother perform. And so not only opera, but all kinds of music in the multiracial church that we went to, St. Paul's Episcopal in Patterson, Afro-Cuban music and Latino music and the old hymns. And I was just always, always surrounded by music. So it begins very, very, very early. And my mother's a pianist, so I was listening to the piano coming through the womb. And as soon as I was old enough to touch the keys, I've always been playing the instrument.
As a child, or as a teenager, maybe, so in New Jersey, and then you would go up to New York and you would just follow these older, just wonderful icons of jazz, and you would follow their rehearsals and different things. And so what was that like as a teenager?
I was always the youngest one in the room. And I credit my mother so much for putting me in those positions, allowing me to be mentored by all these fabulous older musicians. So a lot of that also begins in Patterson. We lived in Hackensack and then in Hawthorne, New Jersey, but most of that begins in Patterson when that same church I mentioned got a grant to create a youth jazz initiative. And I was one of the only youth in the youth jazz initiative. And there were all of these incredible older musicians, some of whom taught at local colleges and universities, some of whom were session musicians who had toured the world or had played at the Blue Note regularly. One of my early mentors was a pianist named Michael Cochran, who had played all over the world and had many albums, had done work in Europe. And so I was starting as young as 13 years old. And I would be watching over their shoulders while they played their gigs. Every now and then they'd let me sit in on one and I would do badly and then slowly a little better and slowly a little better. But it truly was an apprenticeship mentorship model that turned me into a musician.
In that, I just imagine these older musicians having this young man just coming up, how exciting that was for them, because there's a part of us that really, when we're so technically able, you know, and so accomplished, there's a natural tendency to want to pass that down. And then to have a young man interested in doing that, that must have been just as exciting for them as it was for you.
Maybe so. I hope so. But one of the things that I was raised with, she was like a sister. We're not blood related, but my sister Ayani, her grandfather, Sir Roland Hanna, was a jazz piano player who played with the Thad Jones Mel Lewis Orchestra in the 70s. And he was on Charles Mingus's records a little later on and accompanied a lot of. So we had jazz royalty in the home also, Granddaddy Hanna. And when he passed away when I was about middle school age, I hadn't really cared about the music until then. And then it was as if something from him had kind of entered me, and I wanted to be the best jazz pianist of my generation at the time. And I wanted to be around the best musicians, and having be kind of distant partial family to Sir Roland Hanna opened a lot of doors and allowed me to meet other people such as the fabulous jazz piano player and also radio host Marion McPartland, who you may know, who did piano jazz for many decades. I got to meet Kenny Barron, fabulous, very well-respected jazz pianist that way, and a number of others.
Well, I just have to disclose, I mentioned in the introduction that I sing in Joyful Noise in this choir that you have founded. And there are times when you sit down at this beautiful Steinway piano, and I can't help but think how happy that piano is when you sit down, because you can riff, you can go into classical music, you do jazz, you do bebop, you do it all. You just, without music, I'm just so impressed. We all, the whole choir is just sitting in awe when you sit down at that piano and lead us and start riffing. improv way. It's just quite impressive. So I think you've downloaded some of that, some of those icons from your youth. Definitely, you embody that. I've witnessed it and been moved by it. Another thing that you've done at a very young age in that church that you mentioned, I think it was St. Paul's, you mentioned that you were asked to fill in as the choir director at 17. I mean, wow, what was that?
That's exactly right. I was maybe between my junior and senior year of high school, but the music director left under unexpected circumstances somewhat suddenly, who was another mentor of mine, Kevin Wilkin, fabulous musician. And then there the church was, and they just needed someone to play the piano for next Sunday. And I said, well, I can at least play the piano for next Sunday. And I did that. And I had a relationship with the choir because I'd grown up in that church for almost 10 years. And so, you know, well, I can lead some of the choir pieces because I knew that. One thing, Justine, you don't know about me is that as a singer, I was actually a late bloomer. So at the time that I was late high school directing this choir, I didn't yet actually think that I could sing. I was only just offering the parts because I knew I had the range to offer the parts to the choir, but I myself didn't identify as a singer in those days.
That's amazing, because when you're teaching us parts, you'd sing the bass and you can even go way up high, maybe not high soprano, but you can get up there. It's really quite, your range is quite amazing. And I so appreciate that the music that we work with is really from the oral tradition, isn't it?
Yeah.
Say something about that traditional music and how it comes into being. It's not so much written down.
Yeah. Above all, I really consider myself a folk musician. And I think that the Black spiritual tradition is a folk tradition of music. Many of the people who wrote it, their names will never be known or remembered. You're talking about people living through the catastrophe of slavery on the American continent. Many of them were not allowed to read or write. They couldn't name their own children, and yet they sang these songs. Sometimes it feels like a motherless child. Didn't my Lord deliver Daniel? Steal away to freedom. And these songs lived for maybe hundreds of years before any of them were ever written down. And I think it's a really powerful and important tradition, and we need culture bearers to continue to bear that tradition in the way that it was as an oral tradition. And so I take that responsibility quite seriously.
Yes, yes. And within that tradition, if we go back to those days, slavery days, where people were working in the fields, that that held that culture together in some ways. Any comment that you could make on that and enlighten us?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, music has always been a deep, deep piece of the Black experience on this continent and also globally. I would argue it's been a deep part of the human experience, but it was truly the last thing that could never be taken away. You could take away someone's language, you could take away someone's clothing, their money, their culture, the world they had come from, but you could never take away the ability to create a song. And so it began with what we call the field holler, just long plaintive wails that might have been in the field. And then you have the work songs that set the tempo of the music. And then as Blacks became more Christianized, as Black folks became Christianized, then you start to have the spiritual and then much, much later gospel music. But all of this is about community. It's also a survival technique. It's not cute. It's serious stuff. The music is serious stuff. And yet we sing it with joy, and we sing it with this ebullience, this buoyancy, this abundance, because the music teaches us that through adversity, there is strength to be found.
I want to go into this more deeply in just one moment, but I want to remind our listeners, I'm here with Benjamin Mertz, musician, choir director, and activist. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions.
Oh, well, it's early in the morning, when I rise, I'm mama. Well, it's early in the morning, Lord, when I rise. Oh, well, it's early in the morning, baby, sugar, when I rise, oh, baby. Well, I still have the misery, baby. Well, in my right side, well, in my right side, Lord. Well, in my right side, Lord, baby. Well, it's I have a misery, baby. Well, in my right side, well, Lord, hallelujah. Well, it's Lord, baby mama. It's the Lord, Mama Rosa. Well, it's a good old Lord.
It's a good old Lord.
Well, whosoever told that he told it, he told a dirty lie to the baby.
I'm here with Benjamin Mertz, and we're talking about music as a human endeavor and something that holds us together. And you're saying about these particular pieces of music that we have inherited from, let's say, field hands, and how they can be coded at the time of slavery. There was some encoding, I believe, that happened in the music that they would sing, but maybe they were referring to something else. So can you talk about that, please?
Absolutely. And so songs like Steal Away, steal away, steal away, steal away to Jesus. Steal away, steal away, steal away to Jesus. Is a song that represents, this is the time that we're going to go. And so when Steal Away was sung, it meant that the hour had come. You have songs like Follow the Drinking Gourd, which actually each verse gives specific instructions about the time of year, about the way to go. Between two hills, there's a river. There's another river on the other side. Just follow the drinking gourd. And so the music would, in fact, give instructions for people to find their way to the Underground Railroad. The music, it was more than just spiritual music. It was also, again, survival music.
And there were words like Canaan is a word, but which really referred to Canada.
Yes.
Or Beulah Land, that was another one. I'm not sure what that stood for, but Wade in the Water is another one.
Wade in the Water comes from that tradition also, where people understood that if one was in the water, one's tracks could not be followed by the dogs. The dogs would lose your scent if you traveled through the water. So Wade in the Water is both a baptism piece of music, but it is also a instruction to travel through the water towards freedom, because the dogs won't be able to chase you down.
Singing any of these songs, it's just so powerful to do it together, to join with others, to really give it voice. I always feel very, when I come into choir, I feel it sometimes, anxiety because of the day or because of the news or because of what's going on. But then when we get together and we start to sing together, there's something that turns around in my soul and I become inspired. I go out feeling energized, not depleted, you know?
Yeah.
Can you say something about what it is to sing together and to join our voices together in harmony?
There is so much to say, but the short version is, we don't just hear through our ears. The vibrations move through our entire body. Every cell, every membrane of our body vibrates when we speak, when we sing. When we sing in groups, we learn so much. One is that even if I need to take a breath, the song continues. And I can sing just a tenor part, and there are other three or four parts that are happening that make it complete. So I'm a part of something larger than myself, and yet we're all moving towards a common goal. And there's also the piece about the ancestors who wrote this music, whose names will never be known, as I said, and whose histories will never be recorded. And yet we get to have an embodied experience. What was that joy like? What was that terror like? What was that grief like? We get to put it in our own bodies. And my view is that singing is one of the most powerful and accessible ways to do that. We can't have a dialogue about racial justice in this society without having an embodied experience of being together in an inclusive environment. And I think the music is the most beautiful way to arrive.
Beautifully said. With that, it reminds me of your own inspiration. I mean, mostly in the choir that I'm part of, the Joyful Noise Gospel Singers, we're mostly white. Yet we're very interfaith. I mean, there are lots of different faiths represented in the group, but we're mostly white, being taught by a Black man, being led by a Black man. There was a moment, what was that turning point for you to really take hold of what it is that you could do as far as interracial relations?
Yes, when I was in my middle 20s, I was a young biracial Black man, a little lost, a little confused, also a brand new father, and trying to decide sort of how I fit into the world. I'd been raised by my white family. I look Black, I identify as Black, but I didn't know what to do with all of it. And then I had the opportunity to spend a week in a yurt at the Esalen Institute with Dr. Izai Barnwell of Sweet Honey in the Rock in building a vocal community. And at the end of that week, one of the things that she said to me when I brought up all these questions I had about my identity, she said, maybe your being Black but raised in white households makes you actually uniquely positioned. You will be in rooms that I will never be in. You will be in rooms that other Black folks will never travel to. And so be an ambassador. Be an ambassador of the music, be an ambassador of us, and teach them what it really means to us. And so then I wasn't afraid anymore. I wasn't in an identity crisis anymore, because then when I stepped into white spaces from then on, I had been called from one of my Black elders to, in fact, be an ambassador of the music. And so that's what I'm here to do.
And you do it so well, because when we sing together in Joyful Noise, you also will help us understand the tradition behind it. We understand the field, as you say, field holler, that holler that, and you can hear as we sing, you actually hear the strike of the hammers striking you. It's a rhythm that you hear in certain pieces that we sing that is just so recognizable. And you've helped to bring that forth. You've helped to educate us to understand this.
Yeah, so important to feel it and to understand it. And in the a cappella Climbing Up the Mountain CD that I recorded, I include a version of the Ballad of John Henry that I have set to the actual sounds of hammer blows, which comes from that tradition, and also a piece that doesn't actually have a name that I might have called Early in the Morning, which is a work song that was first recorded by the Lomax Archive in a prison chain gang. And the prison chain gang is one of the places where the Negro spiritual survived and the work song survived after the official fall of slavery.
What is the difference between like the traditional spirituals and gospel? There's a slight difference.
Yeah, there is. There's a huge difference, actually.
Oh, yeah, not a slight, it's huge.
Yes, it is actually quite a big difference. And the easiest way to conceptualize it in a deep and brief way is that gospel music in general is 20th century music, and it usually has composers that you can point to and recordings you can point to of the people who wrote the songs and the people who first recorded the songs. And there's more of a focus on the New Testament. So you get a lot more Jesus in gospel music. And the spirituals, you get more Old Testament. And the composers are unknown because they live from before the time when Black composers were, frankly, allowed to compose and be recognized for their work.
And in doing that, there may be like attributions for people who make arrangements for these older pieces of music, but not necessarily compose them, is what you're saying.
Exactly. A piece like Motherless Child or Didn't My Lord Deliver Daniel does not have a composer per se. They are composed by, in the books, it'll say trad, which is short for traditional. And so it's a folk tradition. It's a folk tradition.
Right, right. And you've actually composed some of your own music and been inspired to do that. Some of those pieces are available in the album that you've helped us record called I Dream. One of the ones that we sing, I know, is Hate Won't Win. And that's such a beautiful piece. We almost always end with that piece when we do public concerts. And what was the inspiration for that particular piece, Benjamin?
Well, the inspiration was very, very specific, and it was after the horrible mass shooting at the AME church in Charleston. And one of the survivors, family survivors, Alana Simmons, famously said in the courtroom that hate won't win. And you, as a white supremacist, might be trying to destroy us, and you may hate us, but I will not hate you in return, but I will pray for your own forgiveness and your own soul. And her courage and the courage of all of those Black parishioners who had had death and destruction rained upon them, and yet centered this commitment to peace. It's very much in the tradition of Martin Luther King. It's very much in the tradition of this is a peace movement, and we may be met with blows, but we will respond with song. And so I wrote, hate won't win. Though you try to destroy me, I still forgive you. And though you try to undo me, I believe the mercy of God will still somehow hold you up, and hate won't win. I refuse to hate. I refuse to hate.
Yes, yes. And then that just reminds me of the, as you said much earlier in our time together here, Benjamin, that the ancestors who survived so much, the Black ancestors, it's carried forth with such people like this woman who spoke so eloquently.
Yeah. As one of my heroes, Dr. Cornel West, says, there could have been a Black Al-Qaeda. There could have been a new violent uprising every generation, and America would have deserved it. And instead, Black folks taught us so much about how to love. Instead, we gave you Smokey Robinson. Instead, we gave you Aretha Franklin. Instead, we gave you Martin King. Instead, we gave you Maya Angelou. We could have been bombing all of the buildings, and it may have been deserved. And yet, instead, we give you Michelle Obama. Instead, we give you these prophets of peace and justice and righteousness and love, and have taught the world so much about
exactly.
How to love.
Exactly. Thank you. Thank you. I'm here with Benjamin Mertz. He is the director and founder of Joyful Noise Gospel Singers. He's a musician. He's a workshop leader. He does also. He's just very active in his life. He's a father and a dear, dear person. And if you want to know more about his work, you can go to his website, BenjaminMertz.com. And he spells his last name M-E-R-T-Z, Mertz, BenjaminMertz.com. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions.
They love me. 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 They love me.
New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in Conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions